Welcome in. Time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.
Now, time for KER Politics.
Welcome in, time for Daily Editorial. It's Tuesday again. If anything happens this afternoon, as it happened yesterday with the announcement of Elon Musk's investment, Jimmy and I will be back a second time. Having said that, I have to say one thing, and that is I'm getting a little tired of getting back to nonsensical comments. My respect for a couple of the bloggers is now down to zero, and the only thing that I can say is, Jerry, you have thanked me in the past for allowing this site to be a dumping ground for people who are very frustrated. I will continue to do that, and Jim will continue to do that as long as the comments get to be less personal than they were yesterday. Yesterday's comments really, really disappointed me in terms of the quality of a couple of our bloggers. Krzyzewski, you're one of them, and Ebelon, you're another one. And I'm just going to be watching you guys' comments. I don't really care what you say, but if it continues to be personal, you're gone, man. Jimmy, let's talk about some of the philosophies that are going on out there in political circles in terms of incredibly, incredibly liberal.
Yeah, there's some good reporting right now, and actually it was a Fox report, but there's a number of other areas too, talking about some of these shadow policy advisory groups that are funded by very powerful and influential people like George Soros. And the one that's mentioned in an article on Fox webpage is Governing for Impact. And here's the problem that we face. And it's just one example of a massive problem with governance. This Governing for Impact organization is funded by really millions, if not tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars from very influential and powerful people behind the scenes. And they put money into these groups through other nonprofit 501c3 organizations that go ahead and feed down below to, so they can hide the donations. And so you don't know who's driving the agendas. And then those groups are very closely associated with policymakers in both Congress as well as in the executive branch and the Biden administration. And the result is you have some of these policies, these very progressive and woke policies that actually benefit some of these global corporations and are ideologically supportive of the Open Society Foundation, George Soros' organization, which basically is undermining, it's if not Marxist, socialist, if not socialist, authoritarian, that are really undermining trust and confidence in our government. And it is an example, a small example, of the very big problem of influence and lobbying behind the scenes in a very opaque, non-transparent way that Americans really don't understand, because it's really complex and it's behind the scenes. People that do understand it, they try to use it and they get stuck in it. And people like Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy and a lot of these, you know, Mitt Romney, quote, conservatives that see the system and they want to control the system and they think that they know better than everyone else. And the bottom line is it really undermines trust and faith in the government, and it takes away open, transparent policymaking.
Well, it's pretty hard to change something like that right now. There's so much venom in our society right now, not only among politicians, but within society itself right now. I don't even know where to start to make friends with people anymore, Jim, if you want to know the truth. And I think that unfortunately, is indicative of our society as a whole. People who are unable to think through situations just simply get angry. And that's too bad. That never accomplishes anything.
No, I agree. I think that, you know, using the anger to guide your conversation is probably not the brightest thing. It doesn't show much intellect.
Right.
And, you know, even I think the head of, I think it was the IMF, International Monetary Fund, has just made comments that, hey, we don't even think, we haven't even thought through all the this printing of money and this debt. We just did it because we thought we were supposed to be, you know, helping the economy, but we never thought about the long-term consequences of it. That's pretty embarrassing, because that's what these people are supposed to be doing. They're supposed to, the people that are elected or put into office in these high positions are supposed to be thinking through the long-term problems. But that's a comprehensive problem with governance, where people do not think through long-term strategies or impacts of the decisions they make, because they're chasing around the hot problem at the time. And that's really driven by media and the idea that if you don't respond to the media mob, and the media mob's controlled by corporate interests, if you don't respond to the media mob, then you'll suffer for it. And that's how these people like Soros and, of course, you know, very influential media moles like Jeff Zucker, how they kind of controlled the population and really have allowed no conversation or silenced people that would stand up against it for the most part. And then they alienate those that actually do stand up and make them look like they're crazy, when in fact they're actually saying things that a lot of people really agree with. I think that's the problem with Donald Trump. He got up and kind of called it like it was. People didn't like that. And of course, these other very influential and powerful people are trying to silence those voices. And that's what's interesting about Twitter. I don't know if we should trust Musk or not. Anytime one person has that much power, it always becomes dangerous. But his stated goal is to go ahead and open up Twitter for open conversation. If that happens, that's going to be pretty, a kind of a powerful tool to push back against these media people. But look what the left-wing and the propaganda, corporate and DNC media are doing right now, attacking him viciously for doing this. And they're afraid of free speech.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Jimmy, let me ask your opinion about a comment that CFS made. This is a guy I got all the time in the world for. He said, I seriously don't think we would be involved in the Ukraine but for Biden protecting his income. Did we get involved in Georgia? Seriously. Perhaps Jimmy can explain our full involvement, since Newland seems incompetent to me. Thanks for the compliment, CFS. You're great. You got a comment on that, Jimmy?
Well, sure. You know, I opened up the Security Assistance Office in the Republic of Georgia in 2000. I'm the guy that started funding and resourcing their military and training them, delivered helicopters, trained a Special Forces Battalion, started training their 11th Brigade, and built up a capacity. And of course, after 9/11, we poured a lot of money into Georgia. And I did warn the ambassador, Ken Yalowitz at the time, and the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Eurasia, who was a guy named Jeff Starr. I warned them about the potential of the Russians coming south just before the Georgians were able to defend themselves. So in 2008, you know, there was this kind of thing going on in Ossetia, and they kind of, you know, poked the guy, the president at the time, Saakashvili, and he reacted, and of course that was a justification for the Russians to invade. Now, here was the interesting part of it. This is a very interesting story, but so we did intervene. We intervened very rapidly because there were about 22,000, 2,500 Georgian troops supporting U.S. operations in Iraq at the time, and they were well-trained and they were organized. The Russians began moving from Ossetia towards Tbilisi on the main highway there, and they were using Air Force and, you know, air assault, but they were being stretched logistically. The Bush administration started flying those trained, well-equipped Georgian soldiers very rapidly back into Georgia and moved a naval combat task force into the Black Sea region. I had actually handed over a Coast Guard ship, a U.S. Coast Guard ship handed to the Georgians in 2000, and that was one of the key elements. They sunk that the first day.
Yeah.
They were really, really, the Russians were overwhelming the Georgians, but by bringing back those Georgian forces, they were able to stop the Russian advance logistically. However, the Russians made, and Vladimir Putin made a very important point, one of the points that he's making in Ukraine: if you get too close to the West, I'm going to come attack you. And guess what? The West isn't going to do much about it. They're not going to stop you. And that's what we see going on in Ukraine right now. It's really an intimidation effort. And I will say that it is much more complicated than most anybody on our blog and most anybody sees here. One of the key elements that really scared Vladimir Putin was the fact that Viktor Lukashenko, the Belarusian president, who's very much an authoritarian, as is Putin, was losing control in his own country because of what had happened in 2019 in the election with Zelensky. There was a popular move to kind of get out of the rut of this relationship with oligarchs controlling entities. And that was fearful for Belarus. And of course, Putin realized NATO expansion in Ukraine actually undermines that power, undermines their ability to influence the oligarchs, and might spread to Belarus, which would isolate Russia even further. And he had to act in his mind, in Putin's mind. Yeah. So it's a very complex issue. Georgia was very complex, but we did take some very strong action right up front and made some very powerful statements to stop it.
Yeah.
Unlike the Obama administration in 2014 in the Crimea, when Russia took the Crimea, and unlike the Biden administration, the Biden regime, that basically invited Russia to take the eastern portion of Ukraine just before the war. And that's, you know, Putin's going to take advantage of that. This is from his point. This is completely logical from his perspective.
Yeah. You know, I want to talk about another comment here, another constructive comment. FIH yesterday said a topic that I think should be at the top of everyone's agenda is the upcoming agenda of the World Health Organization to get the countries of the world to sign the treaty to give them a mandate to have absolute power over medical issues, like controlling anything like a pandemic. I hope that doesn't go through. I don't have a lot of time for the World Health Organization. I've done a fair amount of reading about the pandemic, and an awful lot of mistakes were made according to the sources that I basically use for my research. A lot of mistakes were made in the pandemic.
Well, the WHO director, Tedros, is bought and paid for by China. They installed him in there, and he's been absolutely essential in covering up the COVID-19 pandemic and the research that was done in there. So yeah, you can't trust the WHO. And FIN's, his point is a very, very important one, and something that everyone ought to realize and take a good look at, especially some of the leadership in the United States right now. Remember, Donald Trump pulled us out of the WHO and stopped funding them. But of course, the Biden administration immediately jumped back into it. The Biden administration, if they approve these are regulatory executive type policies. They're not supported. They're not actually, it's not a treaty that will have to be approved by the Senate. They're just like, will we follow the guidance of the WHO if they get the votes of a majority of the members of the WHO, which would impose some quasi sense of international law on how to deal with pandemics. Yeah. If that goes through, it's going to be very problematic. And if you have an administration like the Biden regime that allows them to take control, you will see more absolutely frivolous, useless, and painful lockdowns with the next issue that comes through, the next whatever fake issue that comes through, and it will give them much power. We can only hope and pray that this administration is basically decimated in the November elections, and that sometime in 2024 we get some common sense back up that keeps the United States sovereignty and does not allow international organizations that the globalists would allow to control U.S. health policy.
Well, let's see what happens. There are an awful lot of what I would call medical experts in the United States, pandemic experts, et cetera, that are weighed in on the way that the United States handled the COVID pandemic. And I really believe that these guys were 100% correct. A lot of mistakes were made. Well, look what I just found. I just found a constructive criticism from Krzyzewski. He says, I'm in central Minnesota. It's 25 degrees today. Planning is at least 2 weeks behind normal. North Dakota has had two blizzards in less than 2 weeks, and there are now reports of flooding. I'm going to be hauling fertilizer, pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides to fields for the next 3 months. I will try to post on how things are progressing and if there are any shortages. Would appreciate if you would do that, John. I am very, very interested in what's going on in the agro world today. I really am. I think I see another bit of a problem on hand or on the hand for the Americans. Jimmy, I have a comment for you, and this has got nothing to do with John's comment. Where did these guys get the idea that you bought a plantation down in West Virginia?
I think it's just because the name, well, South Carolina, the name of the Timberlake Plantation is the neighborhood that I live in. I think that's what they made the comment about.
Oh, okay.
Because we did say that before.
I was going to say, I'm going to buy an airplane ticket if you bought a plantation because I'd love to see it.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we've been going for a while. Got any comments?
I just thought John's other comment here about Musk and, mission to Mars is a pipe dream. Hey, John, just so you know, what is fueling and responding to the International Space Station right now is SpaceX. Elon Musk has done a phenomenal job in building the capacity to do low Earth orbit launches, massive launches. He's done a lot of different things out there. And, you know, it takes somebody with a lot of vision and a lot of guts to do something like that. So, yeah. You know, I respect someone that's willing to do that. I don't respect if they're going to take abuse of other people and take advantage of the system. And to a certain point, Musk did that in order to get the funding for his Tesla program. But that's what the government was offered. Some people wanted it. That's the way the market works. So, you know what? I just appreciate the fact that he's trying to stand up for some semblance of free speech, and let's hope he stays consistent.
I agree 100%, and I share your hope that he sticks around, and I think that he probably will. Jimmy, thank you so much, man.
You bet.
Talk to you later.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics.